Welcome back to the Hemingway List, the podcast where we do things the Hemingway. We're talking about part 4, chapter 21. But a quick thanks to everyone for being so nice. It's very nice of you to be so nice. I got a few private messages from some of the listeners saying, you know, are you okay? Or they were worried about the whole fine and everything. One of them was even talking about, like, can they do a one-time donation through Patreon or set up a GoFundMe? I think another one said, you guys know who you are. Thank you very much for that concern. I wasn't expecting that response. I was just sort of venting because it was frustrating, but I definitely wouldn't feel comfortable doing something like that. You know, like, I was speeding when I got that fine. I just wasn't paying attention. And certainly didn't feel like I was speeding. But whatever. I did the crime. I'll pay the fine, as they say. But it was very uplifting to get such support from everyone. So I do really appreciate that. Atomic Gecko said, fight that ticket in court, and you could at least get the fine downgraded. Not a bad idea. Although, I think, I don't really know on what grounds it would be downgraded. Because, like, I literally was just speeding. It was an accident. And I'm not a hoon driver. I'm not an unsafe driver. But I did it. So, I don't know. I don't think they would, I don't think they'd go for that. Anyway, doesn't matter. I did pick up a bit of work this weekend at the winery where I've been working. So, that should just about cover it just with the weekend's work. So, suppose it's not so bad. I am Norwegian, says. Oh, wait, first, the questions that I asked about the chapter. Oblonsky is nudging Anna towards a divorce and flirting with Betsy. I am Norwegian, said. I think Oblonsky flirts like that with every attractive woman he stumbles over, if only out of instinct. I wonder if Oblonsky is right, that divorce is the only way out. Anna's disgust for Alexei exploded because of the affair. I assume that it was fueled mostly by that, so I am surprised that she's still as disgusted by him. Swim, said the mama fish, he said, she was unhappy before. If she was happy, the whole Vronsky thing would not have happened. Vronsky showing up just brought it all to the surface. Also, Vronsky and Anna have a very strong emotional connection with each other that goes beyond having an affair. Affairs in high society Russia were commonplace. Hence, Anna being able to counsel Dolly to stay in her marriage and look the other way. But Anna and Vronsky are not just having an affair. Steva recognizes this, hence his different counsel to Anna. It's more than just an affair, more than just a physical thing. There's an emotional connection, right? And that's the difference. It's interesting to see that affairs were commonplace in high society Russia. Makes sense. I mean, there wasn't much else to do, was there? So you might as well. Simply Productive said, I'm with I Am Norwegian. I think Vronsky just flirts with any woman. But his advice to Anna is also frankly pretty bang on. Much as I feel bad for the situation, it is a terrible one to be in and it needs to end. Anna needs to let herself be the villain. For what it's worth, Anna, I don't think you would have your listeners, if we all totally hated having discussions outside of the literature here and there. Especially when the book is really hard to get into like this. I can guarantee if I were reading the book on my own, I would have given up long ago, but because we're going slowly and have such incredible insight from so many people, and because we have the respite of talking about normal things here and there, I am able to keep going. I already have a rating of 3 out of 5 in my mind for the book, having not read it all, because I'm already kind of set in my dislike, but I'll be grateful to tell people I got a lot more out of it because of this group, and even hearing the opinions of those here who love the book and can share their thoughts. Ah, that warms my heart. Really, that sounded sarcastic, but it really does. Yeah, this community is awesome. Someone even, because yesterday I was pretty grumbly, I'll admit, and I'll apologize too, because I suppose when you do this every night, occasionally, you're not in a very good mood. It's just, we can't really be helped. Yesterday was one of those days. I think it was a combination of the speeding ticket, the hard work I'd been doing, trying to make money, being undone and being tired from that hard work and also being sick at the same time, it all just kind of like hit me at the same time, and I just felt a bit like, ugh, why do I bother? One of those kind of days. I feel better today. But yeah. What was I saying? Yeah. It is. Yeah, it's nice to know that when I go off on tangents and talk about other stuff, it's not the worst podcasting in the world. It's still listenable. 3 out of 5 in mind for the book. I reckon I would be about the same. Yeah. War and Peace, I would probably say like 4 or even a 4.5 out of 5. And Anna Karenina, so far 3. But it's interesting to me because a lot of people rate Anna Karenina higher than War and Peace out of the Tolstoy books. So, I don't know. Will my rating go up higher by the end of the book? Maybe. Might be one of those ones where it all really happens in the second half of the book. It is better. I think it is getting better. If you had asked me like 2 weeks ago or 3 weeks ago in part 3... my rating, I would have been probably lower again. I probably would have been like a 2 or 2.5. Because I was finding it a bit hard to engage with the text. But now, getting more and more into it. There was something else in that comment that I wanted to respond to. I don't know. Anyway, I do appreciate the kind words from everyone. That was what I was going to say. Someone even offered, like, do I need to take a break from the podcast? Because I just sounded so exhausted yesterday. I don't think so. So, like, definitely there's days where I'm not in a good mood, but that doesn't mean I don't want to be doing the podcast on those days. Very, very rarely do I not want to do it. And I think having something that I do every day towards the end of the day, it's kind of like an anchoring point for the day. Like, it gives me a bit of a routine to... I don't know, I just think it's good to have a routine and have something that you do every night that's educational in some way, it's social in some way, and it's engaging and fun. Yeah, I just think it's a good part of my routine, so I wouldn't want to stop. I actually feel like if I stopped doing the daily podcast, I would be a bit lost at this point, because it's been nearly 2 years of doing it. How's that, eh? In a month, it'll be 2 years every single day. Is that impressive, or is that sad? That's the question. Oh, golly. Okay. Anywho, let's read chapter 22. On that note of taking a break, I don't really want to take a break, but if anyone feels like reading the odd chapter here and there, that is helpful. I do appreciate that. Lighten the load a little bit. So if you feel like doing some chapter readings, just hit me up in the DMs, in the private message thingy. All right, chapter 22 goes like this. Oblonsky, with the same rather solemn expression with which he was wont to take the chair at council meetings, entered Karenin's study. Karenin, with his arms crossed behind him, was pacing up and down, meditating on the very subject that his wife and Oblonsky had been discussing. "I'm not disturbing you," asked Oblonsky, experiencing at the sight of his brother-in-law a feeling of embarrassment quite unusual with him. To hide that embarrassment, he took out a cigarette case with a new kind of fastening, which he had only just brought, smelt the leather of which it was made, and took out a cigarette. "No, do you want anything?" Karenin answered reluctantly. "Yes." I must have a talk with you," said Oblonsky, surprised at his own unaccustomed timidity. That timidity was so unexpected and strange that Oblonsky could not believe it was his conscience telling him that what he was about to do was wrong. He made an effort and conquered it. "I hope you believe in my affection for my sister and my sincere attachment and respect for you, yourself," said he, flushing. Karenin stopped. He made no reply, but the expression of submissive self-sacrifice on his face struck Oblonsky. "I intended to talk to you about my sister and your mutual position," said Oblonsky. still struggling with his unwanted timidity. Karenin smiled sadly, looked at his brother-in-law, and without replying went to the table and took from it an unfinished letter, which he handed to him. I think about that subject incessantly, and this is what I have begun to write, as I think I can put it better in writing, and my presence is distasteful to her, he said, holding out the letter. Oblonsky took the letter, looked with perplexed amazement as the dull eyes fixed on him, and began reading. I see that my presence is distasteful to you. Hard as it was for me to assure myself of this, I see that it is so, and there is no help for it. I do not blame you, and God is my witness, that when I saw you ill, I resolved with my whole soul to forget everything that had come between us and to begin a new life. I do not repent and never shall repent of what I did, as my only desire was for your welfare, the welfare of your soul, but now I see that I have not succeeded. Tell me yourself, what would give you real happiness and peace of mind? I submit myself entirely to your wishes and sense of justice. Oblonsky returned the letter and went on looking at his brother-in-law with the same amazement, not knowing what to say. That silence was so disconcerting that both that Oblonsky's lips twitched painfully as he silently and fixedly gazed at Karenin's face. That is what I wanted to tell her, said Karenin as he turned away. Yes, yes, said Oblonsky, tears choking him and preventing his reply. Yes, yes, I understand you, he brought out at last. I must know what she wants, said Karenin. I am afraid she does not understand her position herself. She is no judge of it, replied Oblonsky, growing more composed. She is crushed, literally crushed by your generosity. If she reads this letter, she will not have the strength to say anything. She will only hang her head lower than ever. Yes, but under these circumstances, how is an explanation to be arrived at? How am I to find out what she wishes? If you will permit me to express my opinion, I think it is for you to say what you think should be done in order to put an end to this state of affairs. Then you think that an end should be put to it, Karen interrupted. But how? He added, moving his hands before his eyes in a manner unusual with him. I don't see any possible way out. There is a way out of every situation, said Oblonsky, rising and growing excited. There was a time when you wished to break with her. Should you be now convinced that you cannot make each other mutually happy? Happiness can be defined so differently. However, I am ready to agree to anything. I want nothing at all. What way out is there in our case? If you wish to know my opinion, said Oblonsky, with the same soothing, almondy tender smile with which he had addressed Anna, a kindly smile so convincing that Karenin, consciously of his own weakness and yielding to it, was involuntarily ready to believe anything Oblonsky should say. She would never say so, but there is one way out, one thing she might wish. It would be to terminate your relations and everything that reminds her of them, as I look at it. In your case, it is necessary to clean up your newly arisen relation to one another, and this new relation can only be established when both are free. Divorce, Karenin interrupted with disgust. Yes, divorce, I think. Yes, divorce, Oblonsky answered, reddening. That would be the most reasonable way from every point of view, with a couple placed as you are. What is to be done if they find out that life together has become impossible, as might happen anywhere? Karenin sighed heavily and closed his eyes. There is only one thing to consider. Does either party wish to remarry? If not, it is very simple, went on Oblonsky, gradually overcoming his embarrassment. Karenin, his face drawn with distress, muttered something to himself and made no reply. He had considered a thousand times all this which appeared so simple to Oblonsky, and it seemed to him not only far from simple but altogether impossible. An action for divorce, with the details of which he was now acquainted, seemed impossible, because a feeling of self-respect and his regard for religion would not allow him to plead guilty to a fictitious act of adultery, and still less to allow the wife of he had forgiven and whom he loved to be indicted and disgraced. For other and yet more important reasons also, divorce seemed out of the question. In case of a divorce, what would become of his son? To leave him with his mother was not possible. The divorced mother would have another, an illegitimate family, in which the position and education of a stepson would in all probability be a bad one. Should he keep him himself Should he keep him himself? He knew that would be revengeful, and he did not wish for revenge. But besides all this, what made divorce seem to Karenin more impossible than any other course was that by consenting to it, he would by that very act ruin Anna. What Dolly had said in Moscow, to the effect that in considering a divorce he was thinking of himself and not of Anna, who would then be irretrievably lost, had sunk into his heart. And having connected these words with his forgiveness and with his attachment to the children, he now understood them in his own way. To agree to a divorce, to give her her freedom, would mean, as he looked at it, to deprive himself of the only thing that bound him to life, the children he loved, and to deprive her of the last support on the path of virtue, and cast her to perdition. As a divorced wife, she would form a union with Vronsky, which would be both illegal and criminal, because according to the law of the church, a wife may not remarry as long as her husband is living. She will form a union with him, and within a year or two he will either abandon her or she will unite with someone else, thought Karenin. And I, by consenting to an illegal divorce, shall be the cause of her ruin. Hundreds of times he had thought it over, and had come to the conclusion that a divorce was not merely less simple than his brother-in-law considered it, but quite out of the question. He did not believe a word of what Oblonsky was saying, and for all his arguments had scores of refutations ready. Yet he listened, feeling that those words expressed that coarse and mighty power which overruled his life and to which he would have to submit. The only question is on what conditions you will agree to a divorce. She does not want anything, does not ask for anything, but leaves all to your generosity. O God, how have I deserved this, thought Karenin, recalling the particulars of a divorce suit in which the husband took all the blame on himself, and with the same ashamed gesture with which Vronsky had covered his face, he hid his own in his hands. You are upset, I quite understand, but if you consider, whosoever shall smite thee on thy right cheek, turn him the other also, and if any man will take away thy coat, let him have thy cloak also, thought Karenin. Yes, yes, he cried in a shrill voice, I will take the disgrace, and even give up my son, but had we not better let it alone? However do you like? And turning away so that his brother-in-law should not see his face, he sat down on a chair by the window. He was very bitter, and he felt ashamed, yet mixed with the bitterness and the shame, he felt a sense of joy and emotion at the greatness of his own humility. Oblonsky was touched. He remained silent for a while. Alexis Alexandrovitch, believe me, she will esteem your generosity, said he. But evidently it was God's will, he added, and having said it, felt how silly it was and could hardly help smiling at his own stupidity. Excuse me. Karenin would have answered, but could not for his tears. It is a fatal disaster and has to be faced. I regard this disaster as an accomplished fact and am trying to help both you and her, Oblonsky went on. When he left his brother-in-law's room, Oblonsky was touched, but this feeling did not spoil his contentment at having successfully arranged the matter, for he was certain that Alexis Alexandrovitch would not go back on his word. To his contentment, he added an idea that had just occurred to him. When the affair was all settled, he would ask his wife and intimate friends a riddle. What is the difference between me and a chemist? Answer, a chemist makes solutions which do not make anyone happy, but I have made a dissolution and made three people happy. Or, why am I like a chemist, when, however, I will improve on it later, he said to himself, with a smile. Alright, there we go, another chapter down. Oblonsky? Wait, was that Oblonsky? Yes, Oblonsky coming up with the catchphrase at the end there, working on his catchphrase like a villain or a hero. You know, when you do the defeat the enemy, you got to say the cool line. He's coming up with a cool line. Good on him. What do you think of that cool line? Have your say over at the Hemingway List subreddit. Thanks for listening. I'll see you tomorrow.